We're going to be having a look at the subject of solitude. What I thought we'd do this week is I'm just going to say a little bit about it in a sort of fairly general way, and then we'll do a couple of very simple little reflections, then we'll just have a little bit of time to see if anybody's got anything they want to say about it, okay? And when I was thinking about this, as is my wont, I immediately thought of Ryoken, who was a Japanese hermit monk. Say monk. I suppose it was a monk, yeah. A Zen, trained in the Zen tradition. Seventeen fifty-eight. Died 1834, I think. Anyway, those sort of dates. Anyway, he was I'll say something about him later, but I thought of him because, as I say, the hermit poet. And we would start with a poem by Ryokin. So this is one of Ryokin's poems, which I might say a little bit more about later. I might not. It just kind of stands on its own, I think. Okay. The night is fresh and cool. Staff in hand, I walk through the gate. Wisteria and ivy grow together on the winding mountain path. Birds sing quietly in their nests, and a monkey howls nearby. Reaching a high peak, a village appears in the distance. I bend down for a drink of fresh spring water. A full moon hangs overhead. Beside a deserted building, I pretend to be a crane, softly floating among the clouds. Okay, so I was going to say a little bit about the subject of solitude. I suppose the first thing to say in this context, anyway, we're talking about a voluntary solitude, yeah. So obviously solitude is one of those words that is quite a double-edged in a way, isn't it? So it's often contrast when we're talking about it in this sort of way. It's often contrast with loneliness. So we get, on the one hand, we get loneliness as something, probably something that we've all experienced, but it's not necessarily something we experience when we're alone. Oddly enough, it's often said, isn't it, that it's more lonely to live in a city, or you can even feel lonely when you're with people. You know, that sense of loneliness when you're not connected with people. So the idea of solitude in this sense is a kind of positive choice to be alone. So why would we do this? Well, I think if you look at any not only Buddhism, it's quite a strong tradition in Buddhism, but not only in Buddhism, you get it in most spiritual traditions. Quite strongly in the Christian desert fathers, the people that went out into the desert. And interesting enough, they were quite disapproved of by Archbishop Basil, I think it was. Anyway, so you get this, and you quite often get this tension, and I think we get this tension quite a lot in our own culture, this idea that people that want to be alone or voluntarily choose solitude as a positive choice, they're quite often looked down upon, or there seems to be something not quite right about them, you know, that eccentric or that loner. This word loner was quite often has a very negative connotation, which I think is quite a recent connotation, a negative connotation. In, for instance, in American culture, Texas, of course, is their sort of motto for the state is the Lone Star. And the Lone Ranger came to Texas. He didn't really exist, but I think he's imagined in Texas, fictionary or whatever. And we get some quite, one of the things that came to my mind when I was thinking of solitude or literary examples of solitude, probably the most famous is Robinson Crusoe, which I'm sure you all sort of basically know the story of Robinson Crusoe, but he actually spends many decades alone on his island before Man Friday turns up and cannibals. Anyway, we're right. Anyway, I digress. I was saying about Ryokan is a very famous example of it within the Japanese Zen tradition. So Ryokan was trained as a monk, went into a monastery at a very early age, and after studying with a couple of very sort of famous, well, his second teacher is quite a famous Japanese teacher, and when he was still young, I think in his sort of early 20s, mid-20s, his teacher recognized him as enlightened, which is what and sort of gave him a transmission of the Soto Zen tradition. And at that point, usually, they would go off and become the head of a temple or take on some kind of official position. After a brief period of wandering, they quite often had these brief periods of wandering, and Ryokan went off and wandered for a couple of years and ended up back quite near where he was born, in what's called the snow country of Japan, so it's quite high up in the mountains. And he lived the rest of his life there, basically, in a little, very simple little hut. And a lot of the time he was alone, he was in solitude. And a lot of his poems are tinged with actually quite a strong sense of loneliness. But along with this strong sense of loneliness you get in some of his poems, you also get this wonderful sense of sort of appreciation of the natural environment, joy, and sort of celebration. So he wasn't, and I think though he spent some of the winter months, he'd actually be snowed in and living completely solitary, but in the spring and summer, he did participate in the sort of village life and was famous for his sort of delighting in just playing with the local kids, and he was also a bit of a drinker, actually. Quite sake. So anyway, he's one of quite a sort of famous example of what in Japan, I don't know what the translation is, but gets translated as great or holy fall. And we have this tradition as well we have an English tradition of hermits and loners. But I think it's quite interesting what we make of that in this culture that we now exist in. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people feel, even though we live in a time of so-called connection or connectivity, where people are constantly, in a way, connected in one way or the other, in a rather in some way or other, we're probably more in touch than ever. I think it's also true that there's probably more loneliness and depression because of loneliness than ever. So this is quite an interesting thing to consider. I think that as we become so-called more connected in certain ways, that connection, those connections perhaps become more and more attenuated and less sustaining in a way. So I wanted to say a little bit about what it's like to go, because most people, I think, main experience of solitude within this particular Buddhist movement is the tradition of going on solitary retreats. So we have quite a strong tradition of encouraging people to go on solitary retreats. Sometimes these retreats are just a couple of days. Sometimes they might be a week, sometimes a month, sometimes even a couple of years. Some people, within the Tibetan tradition, the tradition of doing long solitaries, often of three-day period. One or two people in this movement have done those retreats, not myself. Though again, they're not completely solitary. You do have contact with a teacher, probably on a weekly basis. But anyway, I just wanted to say a little bit from what my own experience of being on solitary trip and how I found that. Unfortunately, I haven't been on solitary trip for quite a long time now, actually since before the birth of my son, who's now 11. But I was thinking this year I must try and do that again, because before that, I used to try and go on solitary retreat once a year at least, maybe for 2 or 3 weeks. I have been lucky enough to have once I was on solitary retreat for about 3 months. What I think one of the most interesting things about being on solitary retreat from my own perspective is that I think there's been moments on solitary retreat where I felt more intimacy, both with the kind of natural world, which you just sort of relax into the world you're in, you know, into an environment you're in. Usually people try to do solitary retreats in obviously nice places, in quiet, nice places. And you become a lot more sensitive and a lot more aware of the environment, of nature, of the other creatures, birds and whatever you share that space with. So there's something very intimate about it, that just relaxing into the world in that way. But the other thing, which is perhaps slightly surprising, I found, and I've heard other people say this as well, is that you start feeling very connected with people, with friends and family and people you know, and perhaps people in general. There's something about being alone which makes you increasingly aware of the preciousness of connection with people. But not in a way that you miss it, but in a way that somehow you feel very sustained by those connections. And I think those connections can become stronger and seem more real to you in periods of solitude than perhaps they do in your normal life. But perhaps we just tend to take our connections and our relationships for granted. And when you're away from them, they become more vivid, become more vivid and real to you. So I think one rather surprising, or maybe not surprising, I don't know, but one aspect of going on solitary retreat is this sense of intimacy and connection that seems to arise at least sometimes when you're on solitary retreat. I think another aspect of being on solitary retreat is that is this sense of freedom that you get. I think one of the reasons that life can be quite difficult, perhaps particularly when we live quite closely and around people, and when we're having to have contact with people that maybe we haven't necessarily chosen to have, or wouldn't necessarily choose it through our job or through our work or just through, you know, going to the supermarket and whatever it is, you just are with people, particularly if you live in a city. You're with people, and there's a certain constraint put on you. And there's a certain sort of positive aspects, yeah. So if you kind of go to work, one of the positive things about having to go to work, in a way, is that you have to make an effort. And I don't think that's the kind of negative thing, yeah. You have to make an effort to be, you know, civil and get on with people. Well, depends on your job, of course. But I think what and that's fine, that's all well and good. But one of the things that happens quite often to us is that our actual state of mind, or how we're feeling, doesn't correspond with what's expected of us at our work, or maybe even in our families, or maybe even at a Buddhist centre or whatever. We're in a particular state of mind, but the situation we're in doesn't really allow us to fully experience that state of mind, or relax into that state of mind. And one of my experiences being on solitary retreat is that after a while, and it takes a while, maybe a few days or maybe even a few weeks, I don't know, but after a while, you just fully relax into how you're feeling. And actually you start to realise that sometimes the problem with how you feel isn't that you feel that way, it's that you actually aren't quite allowed to fully feel that way in normal society. If you're alone and you're grumpy, you're in a bad mood, in a way, it doesn't really matter. It's quite a strange experience, you know. You can just be jumping, you can get, especially if you're in a wood or in a field, you know, you can just sort of stomp around and kick a stone or whatever you do. And being a sort of grumpy temper. And after a while of being grumpy, you start to sort of rather enjoy it, you know. You start to rather enjoy it, just being with how you're actually feeling. It's quite odd that you realise that a lot of the difficulties that you might have in life is that in the way we live now, you don't really get the time to fully relax into and appreciate the different sort of moods and weathers and experiences you have that just sort of naturally arise, naturally pass away. And when there's nobody else to please, or nobody else to be nice to, or horrible to, or whatever, when there's no sort of constraints in that sort of way, well, you can just kind of relax and just accept how you are. And of course, this is one of the main things we're always trying to emphasize in meditation, is that the first kind of step from a meditative point of view is really just fully experiencing yourself and sort of accepting how you are with a sense of kindness towards yourself. But sometimes, as I say, I think that's actually quite difficult when we're always in company, you know, when we're always having to, in a way, play a role or put on a face, you know, when you're by yourself after a while, you just sort of relax and start sort of, in a way, just enjoying the different moods that come over you, different feelings, and you start to get a real sense that if you fully relax into how you are, usually they just sort of pass, you know, and they just go away, or they hang around for a while. So there's this sort of sense of, in a way, it's quite liberation, you know, this sort of sense of liberation. You're kind of free from constraint, you're free from the normal social constraints. So I think that's one of the real benefits of going on solitary retreat. But of course, we can't all go on solitary retreat. We wouldn't necessarily want to be on solitary retreat all the time. I'm not suggesting it's something you wouldn't necessarily want to do all the time. But if you get the chance, I'd very much recommend it. But I was thinking also that in our normal lives, even when we can't have long periods of solitude, I think now is a very legitimate and important place for trying to find ways in your life to have some sort of solitude, yeah. Have some sort of periods in your day, if you can build it into your day in some way, where you have some period of solitude. Because meditation, the way, offers you this if you're not too busy as a meditator. I think sometimes as meditators, we just bring our normal way of being, this rather doing way of being in the world into our meditation. So we're trying to, again, achieve something when we meditate, which of course has got its place as well. It's not unimportant. But at other times, maybe just to sit and do nothing, maybe in a meditation posture, maybe not in a meditation posture, just to somehow start to build in some spaciousness into your life, yeah? Some sense of spaciousness and solitude in the positive sense of that word.